Blog Talk Radio.
Consultation tab, and you will get a free
conversation with me so we can assess your situation and see if this is something that is right for you. Do it today. We are still, even though it's March, we are still in the first quarter of the year. There's still plenty of time to get moving in the right direction.
All right. It is March. March is Women's History Month. I would like to welcome my co-host, Antonio Magaha. Good evening, Mr. Magaha.
Good evening, good evening, good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Excited about tonight's show. How are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm excited about tonight's show, too, as well. How about, have you recovered yet from that springy forward?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm coming around. So, yeah, I kind of wish they would do away with the whole idea of that, because it's like every time we get used to, you know, one-time situation, it's like they switch it up and throws us off again. But, yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Yeah.
You know what's interesting to me is that just 1 hour, 1 hour
right.
can throw the whole thing off.
Yeah.
That's
I will say this, though. It seems like throughout the workday, or that the workday is actually moving a little faster. And I don't know if I'm just tricking my mind to believe that or what, but since the time has moved up, it seems like the workday is moving a little faster to me. So I could, you know, I could be okay with that. What about you?
Huh. Okay. Well, that's not my that's not my experience at all. Not even a little bit. Maybe a little later. Well, tonight we have a special guest. We have a special guest. Tonight we have Dr. Brian L. Webb, Jr. on the show tonight, and I'm really excited about it. Dr. Webb is the senior pastor of Faith Walkers Community Church. He hails from Michigan City, Indiana, where he embraced his faith journey at the age of 16. He has been in Atlanta since 1996 with a passion for fulfilling God's will. He is a founder and senior pastor of Faith Walkers Community Church of Atlanta. He brings an inclusive, modern, and missional approach to ministry. But before he became a pastor, he served in various capacities, including ministerial roles at Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church in Michigan City, Joyful Praise Church International in Ellenwood. He has also contributed significantly to the historic Butler Street Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, where he served as the youth pastor, and eventually the pastor. As academic scholar and leader, Dr. Webb pursued studies in religion and philosophy while leading as a member and president of the Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated at Clark University. He furthered his academic pursuits with a bachelor's and master's of divinity, as well as a doctor of philosophy in apologetics and world missions from Jehovah Jireh Bible Institute of Higher Learning. In 2019, Dr. Webb unveiled his own documentary, Life After Death, shedding light on mental health struggles and personal transformation following the loss of his beloved mother, Linda Pope. Supported by his wife, Crystal, and cherished daughter, Brianna, he continues to advocate for mental health awareness and support. Yeah, I'm going to have to get you back on to talk about mental health in full. Driven by his unwavering commitment to the Great Commission, Dr. Webb endeavors to illuminate the path from darkness to the radiant light of Jesus Christ. His ministry reflects a profound dedication to ushering souls into deeper relationships with God, guided by his God-given gifts and faith. Wow. I need a clapping button. That's what I need.
Hey, listen, I don't even know who wrote that. I don't even know who wrote that. I do not know who wrote that. I mean, I don't know that man. No, but I'm very humble. There it is.
I want to introduce to some and, what do they say, reintroduce to others, something like that. Pastor, brother, minister, Dr. Brian L., and most important, friend, Dr. Brian Webb. Thank you for being on the show tonight.
Oh, man, I'm excited. Thank you for having me. I'm honored. I am humbled to have this opportunity. Anytime people want to have you share on such a wonderful platform, the great work that you all are doing, and to be on here with not only family and friends, but two powerful people doing great things in the world, I'm excited to be here and share with you this evening.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being on. So we're going to jump right in. You know, it's Women's History Month, and my first question for you tonight, well, before I get to my questions, let me back up. What would you like the audience to know about you before we get into our topic? What would you like the listening audience to know about Dr. Brian Webb?
Sure. Great question. You heard a lot of accolades. You heard a lot of accomplishments. You heard a lot of wonderful things achieved. But what you did not hear is all the things that it took for me to get there. What you did not hear is having made bad decisions at some point in my life, you know, and having to turn around and get there, having to be on the right track and then get off onto the wrong track again. Been there, done all that. Mm-hmm. And so just as many accolades I have, I have just as many situations that I had in my life that shaped me in such a way. But I'm glad to say I overcame those things. So I'm just like you. The accolades and the credentials outside of that, I'm just like you. I experience the same struggles. I experience the same issues and challenges every single day. And I'm just here to share as another human being, you know, how I deal with things and shape from my faith.
Okay. Did school bring you down to Atlanta?
Sure. Kind of. I actually was, I had just preached my initial sermon. I had graduated my senior year in 1996. And what actually happened was I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing. Had no idea. It was past deadlines. You know, I had nobody working with me to show me or teach me how to get in college, how to apply for college, any of that. So I was lost, actually. And I'm a first generation college student and graduate. So you have that.
So
people blowing me out now behind me, but that was the point. That was the point exactly. But when you're the first generation, you know, you're not necessarily equipped immediately what others already know. So you end up being behind. And I graduated, and a pastor from Atlanta came down. His name was Pastor Charles Nesbitt of Providence Missionary Baptist Church. And I was the associate at the time of Dr. Stanley Mason, who licensed me. And when he came to town to do the revival, and back then they were selling cassette tapes. So this is how far back it was, tapes. But I was instructed to pick him up from the airport. And for that whole week he was here, I drove him around and I sold his tapes after the service. And that's all I did. And then one day before he left, he came up to me and said, "No, you're a bright young man. What are you doing?" I said, "I don't know." He said, you need to be, he said, this is what he said to me. He said, "You need to go to Morehouse in Atlanta." I said, "Yeah, I've heard of Morehouse, and I would love to go to Atlanta," because my sister and my sister had come and my brother had already come to Atlanta. So I was like, "Yeah, you know, that'd be great." So that's how I got to Atlanta, but I was supposed to go to Morehouse. And what happened was, it was past the deadlines for admission. So, you know, they didn't let me in, and I thank God. I didn't get in. One of them doors he did close for me. But, and that's a great institution. Don't get me wrong. Wonderful institution. Great pillar in our community. But I thank God for where he led me. So I couldn't get in. And the dean of admissions at Clark Atlanta was the chairman of his deacon board, Pastor Charles Nesbitt. So when I couldn't get in there, he spoke to him, and I didn't even fill out an application to get in. And
that's crazy.
And I ended up at Clark Atlanta that way.
Yeah. Wow.
That is crazy.
The rest is history.
So, again, before we really get into our topic, when did you realize that your life was a miracle life, a miraculous life? When did it hit you? When did you become aware that you, because that's a miracle. Those are miracles, several miracles.
Well, oftentimes, you can't see a miracle until, you look, those real subtle ones that are really impactful until you look back because, it takes experience, evolving, maturity and growth to get to a point because before then you're just trying to survive. Yes, right. I was grateful to get in. I knew I was running from one hoop to another and I knew that God always had me. But I only looked at it like this. I looked at it as a path he had me on, so he was going to provide for me one way or another.
And you've always felt like that,
Well,
even as a kid,
because when I was young, so when I was really little, my uncle, who's a Pentecostal pastor in Arkansas, I don't think he was then when I was really little, but I remember he would come up at Michigan City, Indiana, him and my mom were really close, and he would always take me upstairs and pull out the big Bible and have me read to him the Bible. So, that was an introduction to the Word. He always, encouraged me to stay in. Every time he came up, I would read the Word to him. However, true story, it was until years later I didn't realize I was helping to teach him how to read.
Wow.
So, I've always felt, a sense of purpose. I've always felt that in the circumstances I was in, that God had more for me. If that makes sense. I've always felt that way. I've never looked at my life and said, this is it. I looked at my life and said, okay, if it's going to be this, then I have to meet it with that same intensity. And so that was with God. But yeah, I've had periods of doubt. I have had periods of uncertainty, all that. But as far as just generally from the time I was very young, I was called at 16. So that experience was, living in a kind of violent neighborhood and stuff, I used to always walk to my grandmother's house, speaking of women who, are very instrumental, but I would walk to my grandmother's house, and I would love to just sit on, because there was no violence there, it was safe. She would cook us, make a sandwich, and we'd get on the porch, and she would speak to me in these metaphors, talk about nature. That's why I have all these understandings about life, because I used to sit and listen to her explain these things to me and how the world worked, and always talked about God, prayed up, and I would spend that that time with her. So I remember turning 16, and I was on the basketball team, so I played basketball and had all these college hats. Back then, you wanted all the college hats, and I had all of them. I had a blue Duke Blue Devil hat. And God woke me up that morning. This was 16. And he didn't tell me why, but I was driven to my grandmother's house. I walked to my grandmother's house, When I got there, she came out the side of the door as if she already knew. And I said to my grandmother, I don't know what's going on, but something is driving me. She said to me, there's a new pastor at the church. Because back where she lived, it was only two blocks away. go over there now. I think he's in town. He was a pastor. He was from Chicago. Michigan City is about an hour away. So she said, go over there now. You might can catch him. So I began to walk over there two blocks. True story. By the time I got past the first block, this is at 16. It's a nice summer day, by the way. All of a sudden, the wind picked up around me. And it was only around me. And as this wind was picking up around me, it started trying to push me back the other way. So I thought to myself, man, is it a storm? I might need to go back home. So I said, some told me no. So I put my head down, and I just walked. As soon as I broke the plane of the next block, he was out the door of the church, and he saw me break the corner, and I raised my hand, and he raised his hand. And that was Dr. Pastor Stanley Mason, who licensed me, who his son became my little brother, who his wife's sister, Virginia Mason, came like a mother to me. And that was the beginning of my journey into being really trained in ministry.
Wow. Dr. Webb, what would you say to a person right now that's finding themselves like in the middle of, you used the term a few minutes ago, and I can't remember what you said when you were kind of, I guess, on the onset of your journey. Yeah. What would you say to a person that's not as in touch with God as they, you know, maybe could be, should be, and just kind of looking, searching, you know what I mean, grasping for something and don't really know, you know what I'm saying, where, which way is up, so to speak. They know they need something, but don't necessarily know what they may need. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, I would tell that person everything you need is within yourself. A lot of times we're searching for things to fulfill us and voids, but they're all external. And everything that God told me was already placed within me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would encourage.
That could be. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, you would encourage. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just would encourage. See, you know, an individual that feels that low, right? That feels that low, that feels that they'd have no value, right? A person like that will then allow others to make decisions for them.
Right.
They will abdicate the authority over their own lives because they feel like everybody else's life around them has more value. Every one of us have value. Every one of us have beautiful gifts within us. But the truth is, if you look at scripture, the one thing Jesus always continued to say, if you talk about the kingdom of God, it's within. I recall when they were in the desert and the disciples and all of them were around and he was preaching and he looked out and he said, man, these people have been out here a while, you know. They need something to eat. And the disciples' first thought was to tell them, hey, they got money, so send them away into the cities to go buy some food. Jesus turned to them and said, you feed them. But by the time they got done, they had fed everybody. So what I'm saying is a lot of times, even with our community, African-Americans, or however you identify as, you know, a colored person of color, we are often looking for the fix outside of ourselves. And when we look for the fix outside of ourselves, then we lose because that fight is fixed.
That's good right there. If we could really, you know, we work with kids every day and I'm having these same conversations in kid language every day to kids every day because I want to really, you know, had I understood it as a young person that it's inside of me, God is inside of me, that I have everything that I need and I don't have to search for it outside of myself.
Sure.
And I really, that is definitely a message that I intentionally spread. Young people, old people, it's inside of you. because mm-hmm. God is inside mm-hmm. of you. So let me take a minute. I want to introduce my other co-host, Sean, DJ Sean. Are you on? Can you hear me? There's something going on with our switchboard tonight. I had to call in.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. There you go.
Yep.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I don't know what's going on with this thing tonight.
It's I got a couple of error messages, so it's all good because this show is teaching me, and one of the things that it is helping to reinforce, not teach, is perseverance and going on and not quitting. So, and then not just to not quit, but to be okay with persevering and not feeling no kind of way, not being all out of pocket, and just being steady and unwavered. And that is what this show is helping me get. But how you doing, DJ Sean? How you doing? We had a great show last night. That interview with John B was awesome.
Super dope. Super dope.
Yeah, I got Lena James. People reached out today and want to do an interview with her next month. And Tank. Trina.
Nice.
And Tank, Trina. Oh, Adita Howard for next month, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
Okay.
That's a little lineup here. You got the old school people.
Yeah, and also John B. wanted me to send you a message, Antonio. I'll talk to you after the show about your song. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it good message?
Oh, yeah, it's a good message. It's a good message. He just wanted me to tell you to change something up at the end for you. That's all.
Okay.
Positive. So something that heard.
No,
something that he heard you don't need. Yeah, something that he heard that you don't need. Yeah.
Okay.
Tell John B that he wanna do some songwriting with him.
Tell him I need to get on some songs or something with him.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Hey, I'm trying to get him on. I'm trying to get him on your show, man, and do any adjustments. Yeah.
Okay.
Man.
Okay.
That's awesome. All right. Well, Dr. Webb, we back to our topic. You know, we were talking about the miracles in which your life, because when you tell stories, and you are a great storyteller, when you tell these stories, I hear a theme of miracle, and I hear a theme of perseverance. I hear a theme of not giving up. And because we know you personally, and so you have been through some things. Like, you've been through some things. You want to share some of those things you have been, because you know people are like, I've been through some things. And I'm not to diminish anybody else's things, but you've been through some
sharp-popping things.
But you bounce back. So could you give us one story, one incident of something you've been through that, you know, may have taken someone else out, but here you are.
Well, you know, let me say first that, you know, when you're actually wearing the shoes, I promise you, your problem is as big as Goliath as anybody else's. You know, it really ultimately comes down to a change of perspective, and that's how you see your problems, right? And how you see your problems is a mirror and a reflection of yourself as well. But with that being said, I'm a human being like everybody else. One of the biggest, probably toughest challenges of my life was losing my mother. That there's no bigger challenge that I face. I've been, you know, I've been in problems with the law. I've been in jail. I've been on the side of whether it was dealing drugs or being addicted to drugs. I've done it all. But God did it all for me. He turned everything around for me. So, yeah, I've been through some real things. That's why it don't take me but 5 seconds to tell if somebody's playing or real when it comes down to it, because my experiences, you know, are real. But what I would say is the biggest challenge was my mother, even with all the other things, you know, because the other things were based off of, you know, first of all, you got to do, when we say go, you have everything you need on the inside, that's true. But also, you have to go all the way back to your childhood, and you have to examine the dynamic of your childhood. You have to go back to those places of trauma, and you have to do the work to understand who you are today. And when you do that work, when you begin to really do that work, you begin to discover about yourself the greatness that was always within you. But you have to go all the way back. So a lot of things were attached to my mother. We were very close. So losing my mother was the biggest challenge. She was my everything. When I was the youngest in my household. So my mother was a single parent mother. I was the youngest of four, and I was separated by them by 6 years. So when I went outside to play, it was by myself. When I went to the basketball court, it was, you know, with the neighborhood strictly. But with that being said, I only had a bedroom to sleep in, which was my mother's bedroom, because there was no other room. So when I was young, it was nothing for me to. I slept in the same bed with my mother for till I was 12.
Oh wow!
And then I only got out of that room because my brother graduated and went on. Then I got a room. So I'm saying that to say I was close with my mother. I knew her thoughts, inner thoughts, what bothered her. And my wife can tell you this to this day. When she was living, first time I took her over there to her apartment here in Atlanta, we went inside, and I jumped right in the bed on the other side with my mom and just laid down. And it wasn't no big deal, because that's what it was. That's how close we were, and it was no big deal. And my mother was never married or anything. She had different, you know, relationships through her life, but my mother never got married. But to my mother, the reason why that was my biggest challenge, when you talk about things about women and celebrating women, a mother, a good mother, that doesn't mean, you know, a perfect mother. That just means a mother who's going to do what she has to do. And sometimes that don't always make sense to us when we're younger.
Right.
But my mother, when you talk of, when I look back at my education, that's to me a miracle. I got there and a period of 5 years to get to my PhD. But let me break it down to you this way. My mother, in the second grade, first of all, I was held back in the second grade. I couldn't, even though I have a PhD, they'll tell you that it's like 3% of, I believe, African Americans that have them. But watch this. When I, in the second, first grade, I couldn't read well. And this is all tied to my mother. I couldn't read well. And my mother was an assistant at the school at the time. So she got a lady. I don't know this lady to this day. But if I ever knew this white lady's name, she was a white lady, would come to the door. I would give her a big hug to this day. But she would meet me at the door. And, you know, back then they would put you in a circle to read, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not really cool if you can't read that well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so you saw that. This lady would come 15 minutes before class start and pull me out. And all the kids would see me get pulled out. But she would take me to a desk and help me read. The point I'm making, my mom made a sacrifice to get that done. She got an extra job to pay that woman to do that. Now watch this. By the time I got to the third grade, I was winning Hoosiers Hoosiers reading book clubs. That is, in Indiana, you got to read 25 books, sit with the teacher each week, and report what you read on the book. And I'm saying that sacrifice she made. Now, to my mother's education, my mother came from Martry, Arkansas. Man, listen, to Michigan City, Indiana, single parent, four children, and she didn't get her GED until my sophomore year in high school. That's perseverance.
Wow.
That's perseverance.
Yeah.
My mother was the embodiment of where there's a will, there's a way. My mother was the embodiment of find a way. Clark, Atlanta, where I got to, has a motto that says find a way.
A motto. Find a way, make a way.
Listen. My mother was telling me that in 5 years old. When I said to her, hey, Mom, I need that video game system, she said, find a way of making it.
Wow.
And I needed some.
It's just like part of your destiny.
It's part of my DNA. It's part of my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's already coded within me. And it's just up to us to unlock our stories because we all have stories. And we have to stop letting the world narrate our story and go back and do the work, because if you go back and do the work, see, a lot of times we're afraid to look at it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
I was getting ready to say that.
Yeah.
Or we make excuses not to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But it's rich to do it, man. And I'll give you one quick example. So we were talking about spring and the clock being set back and all that, and I was like, I feel all that. And one of the things, me and my wife had to move to where we are now kind of abruptly, right? We just was going to make that move. It's going to be a better quality of life. And it was right across the street. But we didn't know if we was going to get approved. It was so quick, and then we got approved. So we got over here, but by a year in, we still hadn't unpacked a lot of stuff because we had to move in so fast. It got to a point, so I started growing plants. I've been doing it probably like the last 3 years, and I've learned more and spoke more. God spoke more to me through that process than anything. But spring cleaning, right? We're talking about time and all that. Spring, my grandmother and my mother always did this spring cleaning. And I decided in our house, I remember walking past the room, and I used to be on my wife, you know, hey, can you do something about that? Hey, can you do something? Hey, can you do something about that? All you know, hey, can you do something about that? Hey, can you do something? And then I woke up one morning and something said to me, won't you do something about it?
Mm.
So because particularly marriage, we have to really be present and locked in where when the other partner is overwhelmed. And we may need to just kick in, understand and kick in. So I began to clean things, man. It started with hangers. That's how bad it was, just hangers. Let me just start putting these hangers together. It got to organizing stuff and rediscovery, right? Things that you thought was lost were right there. You couldn't find them or get to them because you had covered them up, piled them up. Then watch this.
That's a word.
When I got to organizing and finding things I thought I needed that I didn't have, watch this. I ain't even got to pay for that. Oh, man. There it is. I thought I needed to look on the internet for this curriculum. No, there it is. Started organizing everything I got. Then I looked under the bed. I said, oh, Lord, why you let me do that? Why you let me do that? Because under the bed is where everything, you throw everything else under. So look, God let me see it so I can't turn away. Guess what? I got to do something about it. Started cleaning that bed. Now, to the point. And I think it's okay for me to tell this story. And my wife is with her family, but she's listening. So as a pastor, right, you get called to hospitals and, you know, you do funerals, wedding, prayer for people, all this stuff. But in your own relationship, you have to be more of just the partner, right? And it can be difficult sometimes. Let's say, you know, my wife lost her father, right? And And I'm writing a book on grief called Good Grief. God had me exploring this process of called grief. And there's something called complicated grief that a lot of times people don't understand. And an example of complicated grief is this. Let's say you lose a father that wasn't present in your life, but it still affects you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet your family says to you why you feel that way. You shouldn't feel that way. They weren't there. That's complicated grief because we can't understand because that's still somebody's father and so or parent. And so what it means is that there's no chance now for what you want it to be. So it's a process that people around us have to be more educated than the person going through. So now God is educating me, right? So to the point, I'm getting there. Now my wife is involved because I ain't have no answers for that other than loving my wife. So we started going through these cards. And one of the chapters will be called Comfort from a Card. A lot of times we get cards, right? And I'm speaking about another influential woman in my life. So my wife, we started going through these cards. And you know, we discovered, you know, when you get a card on the birthday, on the date, right? All these things are kind of expected, right? And if you got a little money in there, you're like, ooh, yeah, you know. And you might put that card up or something, you know, and all that. And you're thankful, you're grateful, but did you really receive it? Nah. When you feel like you don't have no value, when you feel like you're lost, when you feel like you're questioning yourself about the next step, the next level, go back and find all the cards you've ever been given.
Wow.
And then read them.
Wow.
And you got then that you, from a book you, or you or
no, that's that gonna be that no, that's from my book, but I'm saying that's from my experience from spring cleaning. Started with spring cleaning. And then my wife got involved. Then we started going through the cards. This is God led, not no model or nothing. So now we're reading the cards, and as we're reading the cards, we're being reminded of how much we're loved. Because these cards are from a year, two, three, four, eight, five ago. We're being reminded of who we are. We're being reminded of all the love we got surrounded us. We're being reminded of, you know, we are who we say we are. So now, watch this. After that, three cards came up that were the most significant to her, to the men in her life, including her father. And then we started putting them all in the same bag. So there became that spring cleaning became a process to create a door for my wife to go through her process and be able to do it in a healing way. And it's still not over, but what I'm saying is that all came about started with spring cleaning, right? And now I begin to understand the wisdom of my grandmother and my mother. Now, when we talked about that time change and all that, I do feel you on all that, but watch this. When that time go back and we spring forward, what it tells me, since I've been growing things, it tells me that now I got more sunshine. It tells me that when I see when I see the birds come back and start 5 in the morning, it's coming time. They're signaling to me. They're singing in the season. And it don't always be by the season or the month or day. It's by the nature. I have a tree out in front of our apartment, and it's just starting to bloom. Watch this. So you see the time go, now you got more light. Some people, you can't just hope for a better day. You got to sow for a better day. What I mean by that is it is sowing season right now. And it is not it's sowing season. And if you're not putting nothing in the ground right now, by the next quarter you expecting some, but you didn't sow nothing.
But
you
got nothing.
So right. And it doesn't matter if you actually grow something, now you're growing. Growing is a state of being. It is not a here and there. You understand what I'm saying? This measure of linear measurement. It is a state of being. As long as we're on this earth, every day our experiences, whether they're good or bad, they are experiences that will continue to grow us. So planting now in your soul, whatever that is you need to change about yourself, whatever that is you need to lift up about yourself, whatever it is, you know, we know the mistakes we've made and what we need to do. So now get in that soil. start planting those seeds. Guess what? Some of my stuff don't come through the soil, but guess what? Mm-hmm. Some do. Some mm-hmm. do. And then just because something sprouts don't mean you're done.
That's right.
It's
an ever ending. It's an ever never ending process. It's a never ending. It's a cycle, and cycles don't end.
Let me put it to you like this. You got to get it to the sprout first. Then you got to get it sustainable to a place where it's strong enough to produce fruit. Uh-huh. And then you got to protect it from the diseases that it get and then all the other bugs that come in. So when you begin to really become a real gardener, you create an ecosystem that attract bugs that help the plant. So that's like our lives. You know, you get the soil first, but then you got to learn how not just to plant the seed there, but you got to learn to plant companion plants around it. These are called companion plants that will go in the same pot. What is that? You circle yourself with people that are going to draw good things to you. All right.
That's right. That's right.
They're not bringing varmints. They're not bringing negative things that are drawing from your soil, that are draining you, that are making your leaves turn yellow and fall off. You see what I'm saying? So, and it's pruning season too. So that's where, you know,
that's right.
that got me going
right.
in that season that is now that time. So anybody that's listening right now, this is the perfect time to change. This is the perfect time to get in the soil and use everything that has happened to you and begin to plant. Because look, when you put a seed, the thing I learned is this, the biggest harvest, the biggest plants, the most beautiful, the whatever they come out to be, they all start from this little seed. But it's not the shell of the seed. That little seed goes in the dirt and is covered up. What that means is sometimes you got to go and work on yourself. And when you go work on yourself, you break through the dirt. Because that seed only becomes what it becomes when it breaks through the shell.
Right.
The seed. But where did the seed come from? It came from inside. That flower,
inside.
That harvest, everything you see we eat, it did not come. It came from inside.
Right.
And that's the circling back around to what we started the conversation with. Anyway, we're going to take a break. It is 9:47. If you are listening and you want to call in and talk to Dr. Webb, ask a question, get in on this positive conversation, give us a call at 516-453-9110 and hit the 1 button. If you're calling from a T-Mobile phone, give us a call at 971-379-9537. We're going to, when I picked the music, you know, I picked this for in honor of Women's Month, in honor of this next song. It's for you, Brian.
Awesome.
We'll be right back.
You're the queen of my heart. You're me right from my wrongs. Yes, you did. And you took up for me when everyone was down on me. You always did understand. You gave me strength to go on.
There was so many times looking back when I was so afraid. And then you come to me and say to me, I could change anything. And no one else can do what you've done for me. You'll always be. You will always be the girl in my life. Ooh, oh.
Mama, mama, you know I love you.
You know I love you. You know I love you.
Mama,
ooh.
Mama, you're the queen of my heart.
Lifestyle Radio. I am your host, Letitia Dorsey Magaha, and you are tuned in to the Lifestyle Radio. We have a special guest tonight, Dr. Brian Webb, and we are talking about everything, but we are about to get into talking about women that shape my faith with Dr. Webb. So there's a quote. Diane Merrichild says, a woman is a full circle. Within her is a power to create, nurture, and transform. What do you think about that? What are your thoughts about women being the full circle?
Hmm.
How does that hit you, that quote?
Yeah, I think it hits the nail on the head. You know, when I think about the women who shaped me, when I think about the women who shape my faith, all those things are a sum of their ingredients. Compassionate, brilliant, facing struggles. See, you know, when I answer that question, I look at that. I also, you know, came up, even though it wasn't far enough back, it was far enough back and in the right town like Martree, Arkansas, to see that even though black people had one issue against them, but black women had another. So not only were you had a strike for being black, but you had a strike for being a woman as well. And so I see resilience, perseverance, and I think that quote hits it on the head, but it also can be expanded. Because of women.
Being that you are what, Generation X?
Mm-hmm.
You're part of Generation X. And what I consider like Generation X, we are like the bridge, I feel, for
like the whole old school, you know, before cell phones, mm-hmm. before technology, into now we are full-fledged. Everybody has their hands tethered to their phone. We went from women, you know, a lot of women were in the home, not really working, feminist rights, equality, and all of that stuff into right now. As a man, and especially as a black man, how do you feel that the women, the perception of women in our community, do you feel like it's changed at all? Do you feel it's the same, more positive? What is your thoughts about the perception of black women now in our community?
I think the perception of black women right now is bad. I think it's bad. I think it's not because of black women, but it is. It's a lack of understanding, but it's a bad perception. When you look at, so let's take corporate America still. I mean, if you go into corporate America, for example, and you take the highest levels of executive positions, they're still men. Okay, this is 2024. If you look at you go into some of these upper echelons of industries, yes, women are doing. First of all, let me say this: women have done tremendous things, and they're still doing amazing things. But there is still a bad perception out there. But not only from, so there's a perception problem and issue from the other side, and when I mean that, I'm saying how the world looks at black women, but there's also a complicated issue between how black women look at black men and how black men look at black women.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
So there's a family, there's another sub-family conversation that has to take place at some point.
That's right.
At some point. But
why do you, you know what's interesting to me is that, you know, working in the school, you get to see all types of families and all that. You have a large majority of single-parent households headed up by the mother.
Sure.
And yet you have a large amount of misogyny. And it just doesn't make sense. These men who are spouting hate for women, and you... Like, you got a mama at your house and sisters. You don't even know where your daddy at. Why do you think it's so much of that?
Well, I think that's complicated, too. I don't think it's black and white to this. I think, you know, when you go into a household, let's say you got a single-parent household, and by, you know, right, the mother is upset. The child is upset because it doesn't know why. The father's not there or around, but you may have a situation where the mother may reinforce that the father ain't about no good.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the one thing, let me tell you the one thing I love my mother about. My mother never denigrated my father to me, even though she could have did it a million times.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of woman that raised me. She never once said, you know, she could have said it now and been right about a lot of things. But she didn't want to see that, because when you do that, when you pour that into a child, you're pouring trauma into a child that you can't fix.
That's right.
You cannot fix. So I'm saying it's complicated in the sense that, you know, you got to really look at the home and see what's going on. Now, on the other end, there are great mothers out there that are carrying this load on their back. What we have to do as a community, and to your point, you know, our perception as we look, we got to embrace all our women in this village. We got to become a village like it used to be. And we got to embrace single parents. So, and what that means is, I'll give you an example at our church. You know, if single parents come in and their kids are running around, I'm going to serve as a male role model.
Mm-hmm.
already know. I'm not even at. I'm just stepping in doing those things.
Right.
Not because nobody asked me.
Yeah, we love to say, we love the quote, it takes a village. We love that quote. And yeah, the village sometimes, we're lacking.
I think, too, to add to what Dr. Webb was saying, I know in my experience with the young men I've been dealing with year after year, what I'm noticing consistently, the resentment that's being built up is based on a single mother being in a home, father not being there, her being upset and bothered by that and taking it out verbally, physically in some instances on the young man, and him not realizing, I was talking to a kid yesterday, and he was telling me how the mom got upset and she slapped him across the face like 3 or 4 times. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
That's abuse. You know what I'm saying? Now some of it was steeped in fear because he was into some stuff that he shouldn't have been in, but also I think it had a lot to do with the anger that she's probably been holding down or repressing because, there's no father in the home. So, over a period of time, when you continually get that verbal and physical abuse, you're going to feel some kind of way. It's going to come out in all kind of different ways. Disrespect now, So I think that's a whole nother issue that a lot of these young men, they don't even realize it. They don't even realize that the time is happening. Yeah, so I think that's a great deal.
You're absolutely right about all those things, and we see a lot of young men like that today. But on the other side of the coin is, when a woman becomes a single parent like that and really doesn't – and when I say single parent, I mean really a single parent, because at the end of the day, if you got another co-parent that's providing the finances and doing that, you're not a single parent.
That's true.
But let's be clear.
True.
But,
very true.
That's true. That's
yeah,
very
a
true.
Lot of, a lot of that go on. But when you have a single parent, right, a woman taking care of her kids, it's all on her. She's working 2-3 jobs. She's frustrated. Watch this, though. Because of that man, that male that won't be a man, it's required. A woman who's naturally, her natural role is to nurture, encourage, manage certain things in their lives, all those things. But now she got to do that and then try to do other things, which become roles that are abnormal for her to have.
Yep.
Oh, I'm gonna tell you, and caller 337-258. 2354, I see your hand up.
She just listening.
Oh, okay, just listening. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for listening. But
single parent
that right
needs
there,
a lot of support.
I used to,
as a
single parent, myself, there would be in the beginning, there was times when it would be Father's Day. And people started text me, Happy Father's Day, Happy Father's Day. And I would be like, oh, no, don't text me Happy Father's Day. I am just a mother. I am not, I did not ask to do both roles. I'm not taking on anybody's father role. I can't do it. And so I would laugh at me. But I was serious about that. Don't put that on me because I'm just a mother. I am not the mother and the father, and I'm not going to even pretend to do that role. So y'all are absolutely correct about that.
Pastor Webb mentioned he mentioned a few seconds ago. Why do you feel like in a different scenario where the both parents are present and contributing, that the female will at times carry on the perspective idea that I'm still a single parent, even though the male is giving us just as much as he can, energetically, monetarily present. Why do y'all feel like that happens?
This is a co-parenting kind of situation?
Yes. But from the mother's perspective, it may not be seen as that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times, well, I'm going to be honest with you. When it comes to parents,
yeah, please.
We have to be honest as parents. You know, we project a lot of stuff on our kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We project a lot of stuff that they ain't got nothing to do with.
Fact.
And they have to care. They have to carry on until we get done carrying on with it.
Wow.
So,
well, that's true, because when I used to referee youth sports, the parents used to try to live their dream through their kids.
Oh, man.
And these kids weren't as good as the parents were.
Wow.
And, man, I've had to literally stop games and remove parents from the gym because of their behavior while their child is trying to learn this.
Yeah.
Well, my son's playing. I said, well, you're going to have to watch it from the car. How am I going to do that? I don't know. Technology is something else these days. But you're not going to be watching it in here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I send them on that way because you're first of all, you're embarrassing your child, and you're not teaching your child anything by doing that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
And I hate doing that to the parents, but sometimes you got to let these kids see, you know, sometimes your parents can go overboard, and these are the consequences that can happen. Get on outside. Get on out.
Yeah.
I paid my money. I don't care. Bye.
Right.
That's what it's real.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at, we are their first teachers. Like,
that's right.
Our mama's dad. And so they're looking and absorbing. And this is how you're supposed to act. This is how you're supposed to act. Even if it's not how you're supposed to act. I'm at school today having discussions with groups of girls and groups of boys. And I'm like, we're like, y'all are being super messy. And messy little girls and messy boys turn into messy grown-ups. It doesn't change unless you change. You don't turn into a messy adult.
I know.
But absolutely right. You said teach. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say this real quick. I know Letitia and Antonio been through this. You don't see the parent no time at all doing no school functions, no PTA. Put that child out and watch the parent come up there showing their ass.
Take that child's phone and watch the parent come up there and show out.
What?
Take their phone and you can't hear from them none, and there they are.
And that's just the point I was going to get to, that so the Bible has a scripture up there that say train up a child. And I think there's a big difference, a contrast between raising the child and training the child. Mm-hmm. And I think that today we have more parents trying to be cool and friends their children than to actually be the parent that God called them to be.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. You're hanging out with your child at the same places. You're doing the same thing that they're doing.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong. Yep. I understand some things I do with my dude, but if there's a line I draw.
There you go.
Keep that line. No, I'm not your friend. Because you may discover one day they'll talk to you like your friend. you may discover that they'll disrespect you one day like your friend. So I think that's a big challenge today, that you have parents today trying to be their kids' friends, trying to project the life they wanted into their kids. And you see this across the gamut. People who are two parent doing well, but they putting so much pressure on their children for what they want them to be, how tall they want them to get, how, you know, fast they want them to be, things that are not in your control. And then when they get hit by life, they're demoralized. So I think, you know, more than ever, you know, there used to be parent classes, and there still are in certain places, but I'm saying there used to be a real intensive thing about learning to become a parent, you know. And those are the kind of things that people are missing. They don't have the skills. And grandmas these days could be still in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When we grew up, yeah, 80, our grandparents were seasoned, older, and stabilized.
Real.
So that made a big mm-hmm. difference. And so you see all that changing up until this point. And, you know, if I might say one other thing regarding you got the kids, but we're here in Atlanta, Georgia, and in a little while, probably within 5 years, you know, the senior population, baby boomers, going to be, it's just going to be massive. It's every one in four is going to be a senior. And so what that means is we've got an aging population, but yet you got a smaller generation of children who don't feel entitled to take care of their seniors.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to leave that for another show.
Wow.
All right. You are listening to B Lifestyle Radio. I'm your host, Leticia Dorsey Magaha. We are here with our special guest, Dr. Brian L. Webb Jr. We got a little off topic there, but you know, it's on topic because when you talk about women and you talk about it, that encompasses motherhood and it encompasses society, because we actually birth society and the state of the woman. The state of women determines the state of society. So if the woman is off kilter, then guess what? Society is definitely going to be off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Three women, influential women, and why?
Influential in my life?
In your life. Three influential women in your life.
Okay.
Who are these women? I think I know, but
well,
to us again.
Well, if it's currently today, and I have a company of women, a legion of women who are important to me in my life, but the three that I will name right now is, of course, my mother, my wife, and my daughter.
Mm.
Your mother, your wife, and your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the Trinity here.
Well,
the
you
mother,
gave me the three.
The wife and the daughter. Tell us about your wife. Talk to us about what makes, you know, when you were talking about your wife earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Crystal, if you're listening, how are you? Sorry to get you on.
She might call in.
Call in, Crystal. Say hello, 516-453-9110.
Uh-huh.
I know when Antonio and I were, before we got married, and we definitely, you know, and even now, look to you all's relationship and look to the love that you all have for each other as role models.
Right. Thank you.
For us.
Mm-hmm.
With all the things, you know, because you said a bunch of times, you know, I'm just like you. I'm human.
Yep.
What do you think has – how did you get in this blessed position of marriage?
I asked her to marry me. I asked her to marry me, you know. You gotta get out there and ask, you know. But no, it didn't start immediately. What it started with, I was on the campus of Clark Atlanta University. I might have been I was upperclassman, of course. She just come in, and I'm standing in front of the student center. One story, Tish, since you want a story. I'm standing in front of the student center, cup in hand. Drink in hand. I ain't always been safe. I'm looking, and I see this, as they would say, you know, our generation, fine tenderoni, start walking up, right? And I'm like, mm-hmm. And we had just got in front of the student center ATMs. So I'm looking, she can go straight to the ATM as a freshman. I'm like, wow. I was not buying spirits. No reason to go there. So number one, but she was cute. So she went to the ATM and she came back walking back past fast, like she ain't paying no attention. I said, hey, She looked at me and said, hey, I said, hey, it's time you go over there and pour me $20 out. Yeah, I said that. And my wife, my wife.
What kind of pickup line was that?
Well, I'm married to her. I'm married to her. I'm going on 6 years. Been together 15. I said, give me, you go to the ATM. She put that $20 in my hand and kept going.
Wow.
What?
So,
wow.
Yeah, my wife.
Wow.
I don't know about y'all's out there. But that happened. It was before we met anyway. So she did that, right? She was trying to get me, too. That's what you got to understand. So, yeah, it wasn't no one-way street here. But she did that, and I was like, whoa. You know, it wasn't really about the money. I didn't expect her to do that.
Right.
She did. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, my goodness. This is a keeper. But no, we got together after that. It was just kind of cheek and fun then. But my wife has been around all my life through my developmental life from college all the way up into where I am now. And she's just a wonderful woman. I have the gift of discernment. So, you know, I knew what kind of woman, based off my mother and all the great role models I have, I knew what to look for in a woman. Let's start there. Right? I knew what to look for in a woman. And because I knew what to look for, right? But then, you know, you gotta be working on yourself too. And that's why, you know, it took a while for me to get married because I took this woman so seriously that I began to work on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who that woman is. That woman was the woman that made me work on myself to be better for her. That's who she is.
Yeah.
And what you guys got married, what, September
15th? September
15th.
Mm-hmm.
2019. Mm-hmm. So what advice, you know, would you, if there are some gentlemen listening out there who, you know, don't quite know, you know, it's Women's Month, we're talking about women.
Yeah.
So what are some things, because you guys, like, okay, so y'all got married, y'all been married, what, five?
Yeah, be 6 years, September 15th.
But y'all been together and knowing each other.
At least,
like,
15.
What, over, yeah.
So
what
total
of
21 years.
21 wow. years of knowing and being in each other's lives.
Yeah.
So this is not any just quick, fast, I don't really know you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know her and she knows you.
That's right.
Would you say to a gentleman out there who's like, I don't really know what to look for?
Well, first of all, I would tell a gentleman, you know, if your stuff is not together, don't be looking for nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I'll start with, you know, because a man can't really be ready for a woman until he know who he is.
That's right.
So, you know, just because you get married and say, I do, a switch don't turn on, and then all of a sudden, you know, like your air conditioner, you can turn it up cold or hot. No, that's what you got to be putting that work in. So what I would tell a man is, I wouldn't necessarily tell him to look. What I would tell him is to keep working on yourself, and when you look up, she going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's we kind of in a society now where, you know, when we were younger, we used to live our lives, but now people watch people live their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's right.
So the dating scene and all that kind of stuff is very similar, and it's being done with no moral tether. So you don't have no grounding for a relationship, what to look into.
Right.
And the other thing is, and the main reason why I say look into yourself, because if you look into yourself and work on yourself first, the woman for you God's going to present that woman to you. But the challenge is, you know, not avoiding looking at what your story is. Did you come from single parent? Did you come from two parents? Did you come from abuse? Did you come from this? Did you come from that? Because this is the thing with marriage. It's not about being perfect. It's about knowing the other one's flaws, and there are no secrets, and you still love them just the way they are.
That's right.
And
right.
Then when someone feels that kind of love, that's enough to inspire them to grow. And that's what marriage is. Marriage is soil and seeds.
Mm.
But it really comes down to the people who are the seeds, depending on whether you're on thorny ground or, you know, what kind of ground you're on. And you know, you got to fertilize your marriage with continuing compromise, continuing understanding, continuing
yep.
love, continuing accountability to push each other better. But the biggest thing, no secrets. And if you don't want to keep no secrets, then you young man out there, work on yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
deal with all those things you need to deal with so that you don't get with a woman that you ain't supposed to be with. And then you take her through stuff. She take you through stuff. Now y'all got kids you don't take care of, all because you wouldn't go learn yourself first.
That's right.
Encourage them to learn themselves first. And then when you learn yourself, you're ready to step in a relationship to be a woman. Because no woman is going to be led by a man that don't know himself.
That's right.
Well, you should have been. You should go and counsel that woman on TikTok and all that mess she just stirred up. That's what she needs.
What happened?
She needs somebody like you.
TikTok?
She needs somebody like you. Who I married. That's what she needs. Somebody like you to counsel her.
I know what you're talking about. Oh, that's
yeah, and then
viral,
and now they got another girl then coming out behind her and all this mess. You need to counsel them women.
Wow.
Listen, they got a show out now called Love is Blind.
Everybody's watching that.
What is that? And but well, I mean, it's interesting on one hand because you got people behind a wall getting to know each other to get married, but you know, let's be real. Your eyes and attraction is important.
I find it as a disrespect to my daughters. That whole thing that she did to get, you know, I know I'm jumping off topic, but I just find it as a disrespect to my kids, to my two daughters,
yeah.
You know, that are,
why?
You know, because it's women like that ruins women that are really looking for a good man to settle down with, marry, start a family the right way. That's why I feel it's embarrassing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing, though, in all of these things, just like we talked, we, you know, been in and out of saying that everything is inside of you,
mm-hmm.
that goes for everything. That's everything. The things that need to be weeded out inside of you and the things that need to be planted and watered are inside of you. And so if you...
Right.
At the end of the day, it's still, and it's, this is a touchy thing, and people will disagree depending on your level of where you are in life, but everything points back to yourself. Everything points back to you. I was talking to some young men today, and I was like, you know, do you guys know what a flow chart is? Every decision you make either takes you in the right or the wrong direction. Now,
right.
20 steps before that thing, you may think it has nothing to do with the thing that you don't like to be in, but it has everything because there was something that was whispered to you, don't go that way. There was something that was told to you, hey, you might not want to, but you do it anyway, and then you end up somewhere that you don't want to be with some people you don't want to be with, but it's your decision that got you there. Guaranteed.
You can
trade.
And to further what you're saying, we talk about this a great deal on our new podcast, the Heal Podcast, and as well as the Mandatory Justice Sessions. Like, and Pastor Brian mentioned it earlier, you talked about it, doing the work beforehand. This is something I tell young men when I have a conversation, like developing yourself as much as you can,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, spiritually, mentally, physically, monetarily, all of those things are because essentially what's in front of you is what you attract. So if you have not developed those areas, you know what I'm saying, to the fullest extent that you could, you know, where you may be age-wise or developmentally, then you're going to attract what you, what's in you. You know what I mean? So that's why it's so vitally important, I think, for both the male and female cat from that standpoint, and not as a pointing finger. You know what I'm saying? I'm this way, or I wouldn't have, or she wouldn't have, but I'm attracting, you know what I'm saying, the person on the level of which I developed. So that's why that thing is so, so very critical. It's extremely critical. Yep.
So, I agree. All right, Dr. Webb, your daughter. Talk to us about your daughter. Could you talk about your mom and how she, you know, how she shaped you and, you know, put the tools in you. And you talked about your wife, who clearly is a reflection of, you know, the love you have for your mom. So you have produced a daughter. How does it feel to be a girl dad?
So, I mean, it's awesome. Number one, and I want to make sure that everybody know that I produced a person who graduated from college in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And is doing well right now, working one job for the university and doing another program of her own. So that gives me great pride and upliftment that somebody who was raised by a single parent, you know, has accomplished this with, you know, of course, her mother. So my daughter, of course, it impacted my life because I had my daughter when I was around 23. I was still in school. I was in the fraternity, so, you know, I'll never forget, you know, the same initiates that we had that would be coming through. They all knew my daughter. They, you know, we was all in the same space. I'm bringing initiates through into the organization. I'm active in organizations in school. So I was, you know, there's this part of me with my daughter where I'm trying to get ahead, but man, I got this new blessing in my life that I have to really lock in on. So my daughter, the biggest thing my daughter taught me is accountability, responsibility, a love that I've never knew. I was in the hospital. You know, she was born at Northside. She was born at the same hospital my mother had to go into, but Northside. And I'll never forget, I was in there. You know, the doctor, it was a black doctor, which I was appreciative of taking care of my child. Not that anything's wrong with a white doctor, but sometimes culturally they don't understand. And I remember telling her mother to push. And I, every time she pushed, I said, I felt like I was pushing. And I, but from her face, I knew I wasn't doing nothing. But
nothing.
But the mirror. Oh, look, that epiderm helped. But look, that mirror went up in front, and the doctor, he said, you know, cut the cord. But he reached in there first, and my daughter had these little marks on her ears, but they're really birthmarks because they went in there with the clamp to pull her, you know, head out. When her head came out, the doctor bagged back and said, ooh, she got a head full of hair. And you know what I said? That's mine.
What?
That's mine. You know, we've been known to have a head full of hair and good hair. That's mine. No, I was very proud. She came out beautiful. I was so young at 23. I remember they putting her into the protective covering, and she was in there, and her head wasn't developed yet. It was long because the way they pulled her out, her skin looked blue. And I was like, what's wrong with my baby? Why is she blue? They're like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So I'm panicking, having fits. And day by day, I watched the color come into my daughter. I watched her head round out. I watched her hair smooth. I saw every piece of the development. And it was such a wonderful experience to have. And I was, you know, again, I was young. It took me some time to really become the father that I am. That's the truth, because didn't have a lot of examples at the time. I had examples, but, you know, in my own household at the time. And that's not to talk ill of my father, because we're doing great right now, but it just what it was. We, you know, a lot of us as black men start off with just only knowing what not to do. Okay.
That's true. Or so, start off, I don't know, because it could be start off thinking that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, I'm
and
just
with
speaking
that, we're going to take a little break and a musical break, because I want to come back and talking about dads and daughters. Why do dads or fathers sometimes want their daughters to be with men that they were never or
wow.
not even trying to be?
Wow. Great
we'll
question.
Be right back.
Mm-hmm. I got a simple answer to that.
Is a woman.
Ooh.
Is a woman bold?
How dare you?
Is she courageous?
I was arrested on December 1st, 1955.
She's a fighter, risk taker, lawmaker.
We're always rationalized as favors to women.
Educator, creator.
Anybody asked what I thought, I would write it.
You see a woman, she's a leader.
We, the people, have the power to build a better future.
She's a believer. High achiever.
Thank you for this award.
More a giver than a receiver. Woman of hope.
For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it.
For the next generation to not be so cold. Women give love.
I've given it to everyone I know. I
Thank
love
you.
This book.
Women give life. Women are the essence of life. You see?
that we said she wasn't?
Who will have the power to shape our children for the next 4 or 8 years of their lives?
Or is she? Is she everything that she said she wanted? Just look in her soul. We can see her light shine. What is a woman?
Welcome back to Be Lifestyle Radio. I'm your host, Letitia Dorsey Magaha, and we are here with Dr. Brian L. Webb, Jr., Antonio Magaha, DJ Sean. It is Wednesday. It is show time. It's show time. We're in the last half of the 10 o'clock hour, and we are talking about women for Women's History Month. So the question that I put on the table for, you know, not just for Dr. Webb, for DJ Sean, for Antonio, why do men expect their daughters to be with men that are maybe not who they are? And why would they expect that from their daughter when they haven't been that? Somebody else's daughter.
I think with me, I think I want my daughters to be with somebody better than how I was coming up. You know what I'm saying? You want somebody better, not.
Yep.
I don't want my daughters with someone like myself. I want them with someone better than myself.
Mm.
Well, how could they even pick that?
You gotta, as a father, you gotta let your kids know.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, I let my kids know every day what a man's intentions are.
Mm-hmm.
What's he really after?
Mm.
Yeah. My oldest daughter is going through that right now with her baby dad. Well, Dad, I just want a family. I said, you know, the example I gave her, I said, if you see a stray dog on the streets and you bring that dog home and try to make that dog a house dog, as soon as you open that door up and let that dog go out and use the bathroom, what's that dog going to do? That dog's going to take off and come back when he's ready to come back. So I use that example on how they should find a better man. Someone that's really going to take care of them.
From my perspective, so I can't speak for all the women, but from my perspective, it's very interesting because, like, you're as a father, you only know what it feels to be like as a man and a father, but you don't know what it feels like to be a daughter. And as a daughter, daughters love their dad, like they do, whether they the best guy in the world or whether they just the worst. They love their dad. And so what you don't understand is that because I love you, and if you are not presenting the best version of a man for me to see, I'm going to love that because I love you.
That's true, and that's not always true. Sometimes the child will go far away from what they saw the negativity
that's
is.
True. Mm-hmm.
I know some kids that don't drink because that's what they saw, you know, all their parents do. And they don't have to understand fully why. They just knew it was so destructive that there's just that's something they're not going to do in their life. You know, look, when it comes down to this, when it comes down to it, it's this, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of father you was to your spouse. I mean, it does. But what I'm saying, ultimately, what it matters is what kind of father you are to the daughter. That's number one. And because you can't promise no relationship going to last forever.
That's real.
You can't promise that. We 50% in a land of divorce. You can't promise, oh, it's going to be this way. What you can do is tell them the truth. So this is the one thing I do with my daughter. It ain't about finding a man exactly like your father. What it's about is finding a man that will love you like your father. That's different.
Well, and that, I mean, it's different, but, you know, love, even though I feel like there is a standard, a standard of love, that's just my standard. You know, love looks like whatever people been through.
Well,
so your dad was loving you toxic. If you had a toxic dad, sometimes people find themselves in toxic relationships because it goes both ways.
That's true, but we're talking about models. We're talking about models that work if we're asking the question. And I come from a toxic situation as single parent, but yet not have raised that in my daughter. So how did that happen? That's what we're exploring. And to me, how it happens is there's not a, you say, give me, from a little girl's perspective, give me a father, a husband, or a person just like my father. But watch this. My father, we got a wonderful relationship right now. And there are things that I understand about my father in his time that are in me that I have potential for, that I make sure I don't be like.
Right.
Okay? No. So that's there. I think whether you're a girl or a boy, you see that. And then they're going to look at, a child is going to look at the relationship of the parents, number one. And if it's no relationship there, they don't really have a real good guide for that. And the only good guide to me, which brings up a subject of when you got a co-parent, but you're outside the house. Your only influence becomes your interactions, kind of things and lessons you say and that you teach. And the one thing I've always done with my daughter is be honest and be loving. Also, this is another third thing I leave for the men. While my daughter is growing up, ain't no other man going to have to be due for her.
That's right.
Because if that's your child and you're the father, there's a certain amount of be there, got my back. And if you do those things, in my opinion, that love will be resonate there. And you teach your child not have to find somebody like you, but how to make decisions to find somebody for them.
Well, everybody raises their child different. Everybody's household is different. I raised my daughter different. You raised your daughter different. So, you know, I think my ways of teaching my daughter is the right way, and the things that I tell her is the right way, and the way you teach your daughter and the things that you tell her is your opinion the right way, and this and that. You can't really tell somebody's not doing something right with their kids if you're not there to see it or witness it. So that's my opinion on that.
I agree, because what everybody has, you know, obviously have different ways, but at the bottom line in our discussions, and not us, but in society, like I tell, you know, like I look at marriage and the divorce rate is 50%. Well, everybody thinks they think doing it right. And somehow we're not, and it's not out of emotions, and it's not out of, you know, how I feel. It's based off of the facts and the statistics. The statistics say we're missing the mark somewhere, and nobody seems to know, because if we all knew what that mark was, we'd all hit it, and there would be no divorce. So, you know, I think that a lot of things could be up for review, you know, everybody, you know, we could all do, you know, there was room for improvement and room for, you know,
to see things in a different light.
Yeah. Well, let's be clear. I'm only speaking from mine.
It all point when you talk about. I'm sorry, go ahead. What are you saying?
No, I was only saying that, you know, we're all speaking from our stories.
Right.
Our stories. And so, you know, when I talk about my daughter, I'm talking about my real experience. When I talk about my father, I'm talking about my real experience. Like, I'm not making nothing up, you know, and
right.
I'm only speaking for what's working for me.
Mm-hmm.
What's working been handicapped already as a father and how to be one.
Mm-hmm.
What's working, you know, and I had to go on a learning curve with my child for my child to teach me some things too. But
mm-hmm.
that's just my personal stories. And the beauty of coming together is everybody has a story that can help you with your story.
That's right.
Right. That, yeah, community.
Or you at least don't feel alone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio, you going to say something?
I lost my train of thought. I need to come back to me in a minute.
So yeah, you know, I work with a lot of girls, and you know, they have significant problems with their dads, and not because their dads, but sometimes our kids don't always, you know, it takes safe spaces for them to really be honest. You know, sometimes as parents, mothers and fathers, we don't really want to hear the truth sometimes about what, you know, their perception, because we have our perception as parents and then they have their perceptions as our kids. I know with my dad, I had a really great dad. Like, he was great. Like, he was at home, but there came a time when I got to be an adult where I did have a little, and he's been passed since 1998. You know, I found myself having a little beef, you know, internally. Like, there are some moments and opportunities where I felt like he failed me as a dad, and some experiences that I had. And then I found out a few years later after that he actually did. And so, you know, those dialogues, as long as we have open dialogue and able to have safe spaces for our kids to really discuss how they really, that's always the best. Because nobody's going to be perfect anyway. Like, it's impossible. And the more, the older you get, you realize your parents, there should be opportunities, I should say, to understand, like, your parents did the best they could. Now, I might not have been good enough, you think,
right.
But with the tools our parents had, my parents were old. The tools they had, they did the best they could, and they loved me, and they loved me, and I know that. So that's all we can hope for in our society. All right, so your mother, your daughter, your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other significant women that, you know, really?
Yeah. I'll mention one group and two. Of course, there's a lot of them. My stepmother, LaVon Bush, played a great role in my life. Sister Virginia Mason Norris, who was the wife of the pastor that licensed me, played a wonderful nursing role in my life. Frances Webb, of course. And then I'm going to tell you about four little girls that played a significant role in my life about purpose. So I was taken on a trip when I was young, very young, maybe less than about 12, 11 years old. And the HOPE program took us to Birmingham, Alabama. And I had a chance to go to the 16th Street Baptist Church and walk through the basement where the four little girls were blew up by the bomb, and go through the church, experience all that. And those four little girls, man, Birmingham was known as Bombingham back then. And these four little girls was in there for Sunday school at Addie Mae College, Cynthia Wesley, Carol Robinson, and Denise McNair. And I remember just thinking extraordinarily to myself about these four little martyrs, you know, that sparked something in all of our culture and our village. And these are four little girls that their names don't get mentioned enough. And so me as a father with a daughter, I'm looking at these little girls and imagining what, you know, from that time I experienced as a kid till even now, you know, what I would have felt, what you know, how upset I would have been, all those things I would have went through. And so I thank God for the legacy of black women. Let me say it clear.
Yeah.
The legacy of black women, the Linda Pope, the Big Mamas, the Grandmamas, the up and coming mamas, the seasoning that y'all have to make us feel like the men and kings we are. Because the one thing I will tell you again, reverting back to outside of the four little girls and the names I mentioned, my wife, the one thing that I've always loved about my wife and appreciated my wife, I've never had real experiences with my wife where I felt like, you know, I was not a man. No matter what I was going through.
That's big.
So.
That's big.
Well, we're running out to the 11 o'clock hour. We're coming to a close. I just want to thank you for taking your time to come to our show tonight and give us those lots of pearls of wisdom and your ideas. Let our audience know where you can be found if they are looking for you. Because we didn't even get on, you didn't even talk about your fitness that you do, your instructor and all those
right.
kind of things.
Right.
But if somebody wants to reach out to you for any kind of coaching or counseling, where can they locate you?
Okay. So first of all, I'm a certified fitness instructor, been doing it about at least 10 years now. If you are interested in health and wellness in your life in one way or another, you can go to, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. You can look up fitnessfriends1906@gmail.com. That's our Instagram post. You can also find me at Pastor Webb on TikTok, where I post a lot of fitness and health and wellness as well. And then you can go to our Fitness Friends page, which is on Facebook at fitnessfriends.com, or you can just look up Fitness Friends. If you want to reach me and you are serious about whether it's changing and transforming your life in fitness, you can email us at fitnessfriends1906@gmail.com. And also, if you're interested in some of our upcoming ministry events, we have March 23rd, where we're supporting, watch this, single parents, Strike for Salvation, Strike for Salvation. So we're going bowling, we're going to have some fun, and we're going to pay for it all, because we know as a single parent, guess what? That's a lot on you. So come on out and register, and it's going to be free. It's at faithwalkersbowling.eventbrite.com. Then we come in March 24th, Palm Sunday at 11 a.m. Looking forward to that. We got a praise team that'll light you up out this world. I'll leave that there.
Really?
Uh-huh. Out of this world. I'll say it again. And then we got April 21st, BFF worship. Bring your best friend. When the last time you brought your best friend to worship? When the last time y'all been in worship together? Just bring some friends and let's have some fun. May 19th, Wisdom Sunday. Let's honor our seniors. And June 23rd, Men of Faith, where, Tish, we could talk about some of these issues that we need to work on as men and the perspective needs change and how we need to protect our black women and our women, period, in general. So I'm thankful. We are at the Legacy Center, 3015 R.N. Martin Street, East Point, Georgia, 30. 344. We worship in person once a month, but everything else is virtual. So you can go online and find us. And so thank you, Tish. Thank you, Antonio. Thank you. Come on, somebody hit me with the DJ.
DJ Sean.
DJ Sean, who contributed very intellectually and stimulating from his experience. So thank you all for I'm humbled. I'm honored. I thank you for your platform. I thank you for the work that you're doing in all the areas of your lives. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And just keep doing what you're doing, man. I see it. Keep doing what you're doing.
Well, we thank you, thank you, thank you for being on. Antonio, where can anyone find you?
Find me at antoniosmusic.com, website, and IG, at antoniosmusic. And if you're looking for a platform or non-judgmental space to build with men and have some real, raw, relevant, authentic, inspirational conversation and dialogue, make sure you tap in to Mandatory Adjustments 2024 on IG. DM me, and you can be a part of our Monday meetings, the first and third Mondays of each month. Can I say this, too? I just want to, you know, I'm always like to give flowers, you know, give my flowers when I get an opportunity to do so. Brian, I want to tell you, you know, just in terms of my, this latter half of my life, developmentally, like you've been very instrumental as a brother, as a friend, as a physical trainer. You know, I worked out with Brian for, I guess, 3.5 years.
At least.
You know, exercise as a trainer. I did. And, you know, outside of just the physical aspect of what I got from it, you know, I gained a lot in perseverance and just tenacity, man, and holding on and just the conversations we had. Like Leticia was saying earlier, you know, you and Crystal, we've been in you guys' lives for a while, and you guys' relationship has been very inspirational, man. So I just want to tell you I love you, man, and keep doing what you're doing. We notice you. We see what you're doing, man, and we know that God is going to continue to bless, you know, everything that you're a part of and that you touch, you and Crystal. Yeah.
Love you both. Love you both. Love you both. And we're family, and we're here for y'all just this.
Did he drop?
DJ up next. Oh, somebody came in.
Oh. I think you dropped out, Brian.
Who, me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Yeah.
Okay, no, I was just saying thank you to both of you. Love you both, man, and we're going to be here for you just like you're here for us, man. We got you.